ain't the kind to wear a tie. Button up from 9 to 5. I tried that life but said goodbye. I'm not always polite, but I get the job done. Who says that work can never be fun? I'm simply unprofessional.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Simply Unprofessional. I am your host, Webby, and joining me tonight, we got the co-host with the most, Devin.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm the co-host with the most, according to Webby.
And we got Mr. Edquist joining us again.
Yes, I'm back. Back again.
How you guys doing today? Don't all answer at once. It's been one of those days.
I thought you, honestly, when you asked that question, I thought you were addressing it to the audience as just like a general,
nope.
How y'all doing? You're going to lead into something else?
Audience can't hear me right now. Fuck the audience.
I was eating a cracker.
You heard me, audience.
You know,
my day was pretty good. Pretty good. I fought through a headache all day. I didn't know why I had a headache. Then I realized, oh yeah, I haven't had coffee today. It's a caffeine headache or a lack of there. Okay. So I came home and had coffee and I felt amazing.
So,
I had a sucky day in the beginning, but then I got ice cream for free, and that was good.
I hate you so bad.
See, I read that message today.
I read that message today. I was just like, good on you, Edquist. Good on you.
He's like, and he's the first one to die tonight.
So real quick, before we dive into tonight's topic, I just read another news article that I thought it was pretty cool. I don't know which one. I don't know if either of you watched Firefly.
I did.
You didn't?
No, I did.
Okay, yeah, I did. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I did.
According to Fox President of Entertainment, David Madden.
Because Fox knows everything.
There is an option to do a reboot for Firefly or a continuation of Firefly on one condition.
Nathan Fillion's not involved.
Joss Whedon has to be on board if it's going to get made. And I think, in my opinion, I think that's... I applaud Fox for that decision, man. Instead of just saying, hey, this thing is a class... Like, people love this thing. Let's just go ahead and reboot this thing and not give two shits about who created it to begin with. Just trying to suck money out of it and then ruining the fucking franchise as a whole. They say instead the only way that it can possibly be an option is if Joss Whedon wants to do it.
Well, the thing is with that though is I think they didn't have much of a choice because I think it's his property.
Joss Whedon probably put that in there.
Yeah, he owns that. So I mean, that's not something they really could. They could just be like, oh. Like,
yeah,
you know,
but there's go arounds all around the place. You know, you could call it something different, change a few vague things, but essentially make it the same show.
Yeah, you know I mean, but then it's just every other generic sci-fi show that's, you know, sci-fi space show that's been out there.
Right.
Like one of the ones I personally like, that it just slipped my mind for some reason that I'm forgetting now. So I'll come back to that in a second because I'm having a brain fart.
Now, do you guys think that that show just was made too early for its time? Like, well, it didn't last. It lasted, what, a season? Maybe two?
Yes, I think it was only one season.
It was one season, and Dark Matter was the show I was thinking of.
Right, because, like, I remember when it was on, and it didn't have as big of a following as it does now. And now it seems like it's this big franchise that you walk around and everybody knows what Firefly is. They might not have actually watched it, but they know of it. And it just seems like to me, like maybe it was just made before its time, which is why it didn't work out the first time around.
It was, I read an article, I think a while ago about it, and it was a combination of that and where they had placed it in the time, like the time slot they had placed it in, and the shows it was against.
Right.
Didn't make sense.
Yeah. That's I think that was the biggest thing for it. I mean, because it was originally when it was on Fox, I think it got completely looked over. It didn't really get a television life until it moved to Sci-Fi.
Right.
And then that's when people really took note in it. And then that's when the people, you know, that's when it started building its cult following of Firefly that eventually turned into the Serenity film.
Right.
You know, it didn't get that kind of that oomph behind it until it moved over to Sci-Fi, I believe. And then it eventually got that behind it, and that kind of spawned the Serenity film.
Yeah, so I think they were trying to draw audiences away from a more popular sci-fi. It might have been Star Trek, but I'm not entirely sure. But whatever, like, it's like you can't put up a new show against, like, one that people really like. It's right. Like you have to get the audience established first and then make them decide. It's right. Like, obviously, if they already like this other show, they're not really going to give the new one a chance because it's like, well, then I'm going to miss my show that I like.
Right. Like, if I try to make a police procedural and put it opposite of NCIS, like, not going to work.
Oh, man, you know? NCIS is my jam.
I love NCIS. I love Me pretty too. Much NCIS in order, NCIS, NCIS LA, and then all the other ones can go away. but go ahead. Yeah, like NCIS is like, if I made a show opposite of NCIS, it would have to be completely groundbreaking and amazing, or like Blue Bloods, same deal. Like, it would have to be completely groundbreaking or amazing in order for me to overcome that. Otherwise, I'm just getting
runoff.
Pretty good show. Pretty good.
I will say, however, going back to Star Trek, since Edquist brought that up, I saw a coworker today who was wearing a black shirt, and it just had an Enterprise, like an outline of the ship, pointing upward, on his chest. And I looked at it, and I told him, the first thought out of my head was, why do you have a shirt with a pizza cutter on it? And then he started laughing. He's like, yeah, I thought it was a pizza cutter at first, too. Then I realized it was the Enterprise. I was like, oh, yeah, I see it now. So, I'm sorry, Star Trek fans, but the Enterprise is just a giant pizza cutter.
Things you can't unsee.
Yep. So, I just wanted to bring up that Firefly little thing. That's all. I thought it was interesting.
I just saw something like that the other day. It was the Mockingjay symbol from The Hunger Games. It looks like Johnny Bravo holding an arrow. Somebody pointed that out, and no, I can't unsee it.
All right. So today, we're going to do the same thing we did last episode. We got tips on ways to be a better role player. Last time, I believe we made it to number 5, which was don't harm other players. So now we're going to start off with number 6. Know the system, don't be a dick about it. If you know a system, you are easier to GM for because you know your character's limitations. You can calculate the rough odds of a particular action succeeding or failing, just like in real life. You can make prompt assessments of situations and act accordingly because you understand the rules of the world. New players, of course, get a free pass on this one, but do make an effort to learn the rules, obviously, if you're keen on sticking around in the hobby. But for the love of God, don't rules lawyer. Do not do that. What's he say here? It's not hard to work out because here's a simple guide. If you're arguing over a rule for more than 20 seconds, you're a rules lawyer. I don't agree with that. Anyway, you are the health and safety inspector of the role-playing games, and you need to stop talking because you're sucking the fun out of the game. There are times when rules are wrong, and that's fine, but I'm hard-pressed to think of that time the guy remembered the rule, and we all laughed and had a great time because he made the GM change it. Wow, that was a fucked up situation. I don't agree with this. Like, I agree if you are knowledgeable about the rules of a system, not to be an overt dick about, you know, oh, you can't do that. Especially if you're not the DM or the GM. But pointing out, you know, if the GM makes a mistake and you point out, hey, this is what this is the rules as written, so on and so forth. Ultimately, just point it out if you feel compelled to talk about it. And then it's ultimately, I feel it's going to be up to the DM one way or the other. I will say, from a DM perspective, one thing I don't like, and it's fine if you want to get into a small discussion about it, I don't like it when players argue with me. Because then it's like, well, you know what? I'm the DM, I have final say, and I'm going to change the fucking rule just to piss you off now. You know? And, I don't know. I can understand where this would cause arguments amongst people, but I definitely think if you understand the rules, you should bring them up, because that's how other people play, that's how other people are going to learn them.
Yeah,
that's my. Well, opinion.
I was going to say was, like, it's okay to be a rules lawyer as long as you remember that you are a lawyer and the DM is the judge. So. I mean, yeah, if you bring it up, okay, yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be. But if the DM then says, well, no, I'm going to do it this way, that's the end of the argument. It's like, okay, well, fine. And then, you know, maybe make note of it. Okay, this is how we do it in this campaign instead. It's useless to, like, argue. Because arguing, like, over it for a long time is just, like you said, going to suck the fun out of it. You're just going to be like, okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's not fun anymore.
I mean, by the standards he wrote down, Webby should hate me. I mean, me and Webby often get into conversations and discussions about rules. Sometimes I'm right, sometimes he's right. But at the end of the day, I think you have to, either way, you can, like you said, you can rules lawyer, you can have conversations about the rules. It doesn't make you a bad player. It's, you have to be able to then say, when proven wrong, or, you know, just, you know what, it's your game.
Right.
I'll accept it. That's fine. You know, that's what you ultimately need to do. And I think, you know, I think I handle that pretty well, especially with you. Cause I know me and you, we've gotten to a couple, I don't want to say heated discussions. We've gotten to a couple of long winded discussions about particular rules about things, but ultimately it boils down to just saying, oh, yep, you're right. I was wrong. My bad. Or, okay, cool. We can do it that way. And then that's it. You know, I mean, cause I think ultimately that, especially when, if the rule is murky or unclear, you need to have that discussion,
right?
Because you may play in a group where it's handled differently. Some groups handle things differently, and it comes up in conversation, and yeah, you need to have that out. You don't need to just sit there and, you know, so sometimes you have to talk about a rule more than 20 seconds and things like that, because it just requires a more in-depth look about certain specific situations of how that rule will and will not work. And sometimes it's better to hash those out, especially as a player, if you know the system and you know that situation with how you play might come up. It's better to know it ahead of time than, especially on like a podcast environment where we spend 30 minutes arguing over or trying to figure out how this is going to work.
Right.
On air, you know?
And I definitely think if you, unless it's in the moment, if you have a question about how a rule works and you feel like approaching your DM about it, if you think it works one way, assume your DM thinks the opposite, and then look into it. Read forums to see what other people's opinions are, if this has come up as a question before. That way, when you approach your DM, you can say, hey, I was wondering about this particular rule and how this would work in-game. Here's a list, you know, here's what other people have to say about it. How do you rule this? And a lot of the times, like, when it comes to distraction stuff in our D&D campaigns, it's not just up to me. So I can't just come up with, unless I know the rule for sure, I usually have to also talk to Austin and talk to Rob. Because us three are co-building this world. Which is odd in itself, but it's really fun that way. So we have to kind of keep each other informed as to how we would rule on certain things. And Goose is especially really good because you can ask him a question, he'll give his opinion, and then if you still feel like it should be ruled a different way, you can kind of state your argument, and he'll think on it, and then he's willing to try it out that way. But he generally gives good arguments as to why he feels, you know, one way about certain things. But I definitely don't think, unless, again, unless it's in the moment, don't just approach your DM saying, hey, how's this work? I don't think it works that way. Blah, 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 blah. And then have nothing to back it up. You know, it's always better.
Unless you're asking
to,
a question.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's always better, like, if somebody were to come to me saying, hey, I don't think you ruled this whatever very well. Yeah. It's always best to go into that situation more informed. Because you're generally, I feel like you, with the more information behind you, you're more likely to sway your DM, you know, in your favor. And then there's things like, some of these things, like Devin said, could turn into arguments, which they shouldn't. And then other times, they turn into arguments that then turn into jokes, especially with me and Devin, where I already have...
Can I roll insight on this upcoming...
on this swamp?
Can I insight this upcoming, you know, conversation?
Well, you know, Devin, in distractions, somewhere there's going to be a swamp, and I'm going to let you insight it.
All right. Cool.
Even though I already ruled no that you can't, I'm going to let you.
Yep. It's funny because the only reason why I was behind that is because if you look at like the definition of what insight should be, theoretically, in that situation, it could have worked. However, D&D does definitely define, you know, what insight specifically is used for. So that's what it kind of boils down to. Yep. But yeah, it was a fun conversation.
I got what you were saying, more like instinct or
everybody understood where I was coming from, and it was just one of those things where it's like, yeah, but
no. Right.
So it's like, fine, be that way.
I feel like the universe is out to get me. Can I insight that?
So all in all, with this number six, I agree. If you should know and you should learn the system that you want to play, and don't be a dick about the rules, but at the same time, always, always, always ask questions. If you don't understand something, ask. If you feel one way, but you want to know other people's opinions, ask. There's nothing wrong with questions. I would rather a player sit down at my table and ask a million questions than somebody who just doesn't care, essentially. You know, because that person who just doesn't care and doesn't ever ask questions about anything, they don't seem interested at that point. You know? Unless they know everything. Then fine, sure, be that way. Alright.
But what you guys do, I think, is a good... Even for people that aren't multiple people building a world, a good... Like, what we do in the podcast and what... It's a good thing to do for like individual games too, is when you guys say, okay, well, I'm not sure about this. We're going to rule it this way for this game, but then we're going to get together later and talk about it.
Yeah.
So, and then we'll give you a final ruling. I mean, for a regular, if you're doing it at a regular table game with friends, it's the same kind of thing. Be like, okay, well, we're going to just rule it this way so we can get on with the game. We can discuss it after the game when we have more time. So that way you're not like dragging everyone else out with this long argument. Like, argue about it later and see where it goes.
Yep. I completely agree with that. Anything else, Devin? I take that silence as a no, Webby. You can move on now. I already told you I was going to keep my answers to a minimum.
Okay, real quick, just to follow up with it. Sorry. Somebody decided to call me. Following up in a conversation last minute is what I would say is this. What I would say is basically you feel free to bring a conversation and bring up any rules discrepancies up with your DM at any given time. However, you need to be able to then walk away. Understand that if it doesn't go your way, walk away. Don't have an issue with it.
Yep.
You know, that's really that.
And always, as a player, you have to understand, even if you don't agree, like Edquist kind of said earlier, you can play the rules lawyer all you want, but the DM has final say in the game. So moving on to number 7, give the game your attention. If you can't give it your full attention, step away from the table. Hey, what's that you're playing? On your phone there. Oh, it's Candy Crush Saga? That's funny. All these dice and character sheets gave me the impression that we were playing Dungeons and fucking Dragons. I must be terribly mistaken. I love that opening opening paragraph from this author. It's hard to think of a way to be more dismissive of someone's game than playing a different game during it. If you find yourself getting so bored by what's going on, you're resorting to playing a game on your phone or reading a book or checking Facebook, then step away from the game. You're draining the group with your very presence. I would rather have an empty chair than someone who wasn't paying attention because I don't have to entertain an empty chair. And of course, it's up to the GM to offer an entertaining game. This is not one-sided, but going back to the point one, act whenever you can, give them something to work with. Unless you're paying them money to do this, they are under no obligation to dance like a monkey for you just because they're behind the screen. Yeah, let's start with Rob. What do you think about this one?
What? Oh, I'm sorry, I was playing Candy Crush.
You motherfucker.
Very true. Like, I mean, I usually am, like, riveted by the game. Like, I want to know, even if I'm not involved in something, I want to know what other people are saying. Because otherwise I could get lost or I could miss something important. I've never encountered it in any of my distractions media stuff, but I do play a D&D game with a couple friends. And I've had that happen where, like, some of us will be talking and then we'll turn to, like, somebody and ask them a question. They'll be like, oh, sorry, I was watching something on YouTube. What'd you say? It's like, so you just missed this entire conversation. It could be pertinent to you or it might not. And it's like, and even if it's not, you're not really paying attention to us, which means you don't care about what we're saying. So it's kind of like a slap in the face almost.
Right.
It's like, and if we're not paying attention when you're talking, those are usually people that are like, why aren't you listening to me? It's like, oh my God.
Devin, what do you think?
I've personally been involved in groups where people are like this. And it, you know, and for various reasons, you know, I have a particular friend who can get pretty long-winded and, you know, can go off on these tangents, and that's fine. But it, especially when you have other people in your group who are just kind of, they like D&D, but they're not super super involved in D&D. They like playing it, but they're not super involved into, like, the heavy into the role playing and all that other stuff. So you have one friend who kind of is, he'll go off on these 10-minute, like, you know, descriptions and things like that, and that's fine. But those guys, they'll check out. And I have an issue with it to an extent. If you're checking out of conversation, like you said, that's pertinent, or you're checking out of, you know, the experience, that's when it, you know, you checking out, it makes me have to repeat myself and makes other people have to repeat themselves. Or you checking out involves, you know, you playing YouTube on your phone on speaker so you can hear a video, and it's distracting the table. I have a problem with that. But, like, if we're in combat or something and it's not your turn, especially playing an older edition like 3.5, where combat took way longer, fourth edition took stupidly long. If you're sitting there and, you know, you know your turn went and you're on your phone and you're playing Candy Crush or you're playing whatever on your phone, I don't have a problem with that. You know, but I think outside of combat, you should be paying attention to the table and see, and, you know, kind of see what's going on, or at least be aware of your surroundings. So if something's asked of you or something comes up of you, or the DM presents a problem for you to solve, you should be able to actively add to that conversation and not just be like, oh, sorry, I didn't hear what you said. What was that? So if you're interrupting and you're not paying attention to the point where people have to repeat themselves, you're going to run into, you know, that's where I have problems with it. But if you're just off on your own, you know, off on your own, but when people ask you questions or it comes your turn again, we're not, like, looking for you, or we're not like, hey, come on, then I don't really care.
Right on.
Like, I mean, I agree somewhat with the combat thing. It's just that with combat, like, sometimes in combat, I'll, like, look at emails or something, like, but I won't get involved completely in something else, like a totally different game, because sometimes people are like, like it, maybe if you're the healer, you're going to be asking people, oh, where are you at? And then if people aren't listening, like you have to repeat yourself. Oh, what'd you say? Oh, I want to know how many HP you had, or if you're involving them in some kind of area of effect or something like that. It also that like even makes combat longer because then you have to repeat yourself for all that kind of thing. Like do something during combat, but don't get so involved that you're not paying attention when people mention you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Sidebar tangent. I told Webby I'll keep these short, and I will. I promise. So I play a lot of healers. I played in a D&D group like for like 3 months. Most annoying D&D group of all time. The DM did not allow the question of health wise. What are you at? He did not allow that. So if you had to just go off of description of what happened to them, on how damaged they were, or if you wanted to just do a it costs you your move action to scan the battlefield and roll a heal check and see who needed heals the most. I was like, you know what, dude? Fine. That's fine. I'll play your games. See, but yeah, I mean, go ahead.
We did something similar. Like when on Nerd Church, back when we were playing the D&D game before we started playing Vamp again, our DM, my buddy Chris, he didn't want us saying, for the strict purpose of healing and stuff, a numeric value to how low we were on hit points. And he also didn't want to know the number to how many hit points we had because he wanted to make death a possible thing. Like he didn't want to purposefully hold back if he knew that I was only at 2 hit points. But we came up with a thing. We figured out like mathematically how you can get a percentage between 1 and 100 based off of what your hit points are and what your total hit points were. And we assigned a chart that we wrote on my wall.
In permanent marker.
It wasn't permanent at the time. It is now because it's been on there forever. But, you know, so like 100 to 88% was okay. And then you had bruised, hurt, injured, wounded, mauled, crippled, and near death. So like so near death was 9 to 1%.
You ripped the Vamp health system and attached numerical values to it?
Essentially, yeah. so that way, if somebody said, oh, hey, you know, Webby, how's your character looking? I could say, yeah, you know, I look wounded, which is below 50%. So that can say, okay, well, he looks fucked up. I'm going to heal him.
I like it.
You know?
That same DM, though, there was no health conversations involved. Everything was, you had to cinematically describe it. It was very cinematic. It was a fun game to play in, but it was one of those things where it's like, I cannot optimize. Like, it was one of those parties, of course, that ran in Leroy and Jenkins style. And I'm like, as a healer, I cannot optimize my heals off this. I need to know what's going on. I need to know who's going to drop. And, it works to an extent. So I spent a lot of my move actions. I basically just converted over to a cloistered cleric. So I just spent all, got extra heal slots, dropped my health dice down to a 6 dice, and just sat in the back scanning the battlefield and popping up heals, because that's basically all I could do. And that was an interesting character to play. Very fun character, right next to my cleric with a whip. That was also a fun character.
I loved my 5e cleric, because if you didn't have money to pay me, I just wouldn't heal you. Plain and simple. You want heals? Pay coin.
But
except for your character, Devin, because you paid up front.
I paid up front. And then we had a bond.
Yep.
Yep.
Edquist, you sounded like you were about to have a question.
I was muted. I don't know how that's
I thought I heard you start to chime in. Like you had a question on that.
No, I was going to chime in, but I didn't have a question. But I was on mute, so that's interesting. You're apparently a mind reader. But I also had a 5e cleric in a game that my brother was running, and I loved him. Because that spell that you used against the Merilith, Devin, the one with the aura, like it describes it as if you're a good cleric, like angels come down to protect you, or if you're bad, it's like demons rise up.
Yeah, it's like imps that fly around.
Yep. So that's, like, I would always, and I also had Raise Dead, so I would raise an army of zombies, and then I would be surrounded by angels. And it was like the weirdest.
Actually, you know what? To tie that back in to the last question, question before last, or was the last question? you know, raised Dead Spell. Me, Webby, and Austin had a conversation about, as a cleric, as a good cleric, would I have that spell? And, you know, that was a conversation we had. It wasn't an argument. It was just a conversation of talking about both sides. So I think you can have civil conversations about rules and about interpretation of rules that can sway. And I think at the end of that conversation, and I swayed you, you let me take it. You know, and it's one of those things where you have to have civil conversations. You can't go in like throwing the book at people going, no, you know, right. You can't do that. So, I mean, yeah, tie that back in that whole conversation.
Then,
yeah.
Generally speaking, as a DM, if a player approaches me and astonished, you know, Anthony approached, you know, in the chat about animating skulls and stuff. We had a big, long conversation. And then he actually messaged me privately about that whole thing. You know, he asked a question. And then a bunch of people chimed in with their opinions. I even chimed in with what I feel. And he eventually swayed me. Because generally as a DM, my mentality is, if you want to try it, try it. It's either going to work or it won't work. And if it does work, it may or may not have consequences.
Yeah, so you like even you, let me have you, true faith.
You being a cleric, if you took the raised dead, depending on how you utilize it and whatnot, it may or may not have consequences on you. That's how we deemed it. Because we have, yep. As a pre-existing thing, me, Goose, and Austin, we have, you know, a list of deities in our world. There is good and evil, obviously, and there are neutrals. But just simply by using it, even if you don't piss off your deity, you might piss off somebody else, you know, a different deity. And then, I don't know, everything has consequences.
Yep.
You know, what you do on Tyrna might affect things on Acidia or the mainlands. So,
yep.
The whole butterfly effect, man. But I'm not, very, very seldom, unless something just flat out mind explosions me that just doesn't make sense, very seldomly am I going to tell people, no, you just flat out can't do that. Like, hey, you want to do that? You can certainly try. So, all right. So number 8, moving on. This one comes up to a more recent episode as well. Part of it anyway. If you make someone uncomfortable, apologize and talk to them about it. I guess we can all understand what this little paragraph is going to be, or what this number 8 is going to be about. So this author says, I have a rule in my games, and that rule is no fucking anything else. Simple, clean, elegant, no sexual conduct, it's weird. Often I've had seduction attempts, obviously, and that's fine. I've had characters deeply affected by rape. I've even had someone negotiate time with a skin thief alien to reanimate a cat for the purposes of sexual pleasure as part of a heist. But...
I want to read the cliff notes of that adventure.
Right? But, and this is the crucial thing here, nothing fucked anything else on screen. And if you're thinking, ha ha ha, okay then, but is fisting all right? Get the fuck out. This guy's very blunt.
But seriously though, is fisting all right?
No.
Okay.
And that's the point. In situations like the ones we find ourselves in on a weekly basis, it's easy to make people feel uncomfortable. Maybe it's as blatant as discussing dead babies or bestiality. Maybe it's something much more benign, like being rude or chatting up in character. If you think you might have upset someone, then ask them quietly on the side, and if you have, apologize. Stop talking about that particular thing. Not rocket science. That's how existing as a functional social human being works. And somehow, because we're pretending to be a halfling for a bit, we often forget how to do it. So, you know, be nice, be extra nice. No one's going to think any less of you for it. That's number 8. Thoughts? Let's start with Devin this time. No fisting.
No fisting.
I'm not going to rule out the dead babies.
No, not that. My Skype was acting up. Can you just repeat that question? Sorry.
What?
Can you repeat the question? My Skype was acting
up. He was playing Candy Crush.
No, my Skype was acting up. Really, it was. I was trying to fix Skype. You were like cutting in out every other word, but I realized what was up with it.
I just wanted you. I wanted your opinion on what you feel about
making
people
uncomfortable
and then apologizing to them if you had.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, I never apologize for making someone's character uncomfortable. If you make a player uncomfortable through your role playing, absolutely drop them. Like, you know, in either after the session or, you know, us on a podcast, I would say after the session or in a chat to say, hey, you know, sorry if this makes you uncomfortable, or, you know, I'm sorry if it makes you uncomfortable. But I mean, if you make someone's character uncomfortable, that's perfectly fine.
Right.
You know, that's the character. But if you make a person uncomfortable with through your role play, unless that's what you're going for. I mean, if you're going for the like super, you know, method creepy dude, like if I'm in a horror game and I'm playing like a, you know, I'm playing a, you know, and as a GM, I'm role playing a really creepy fucking dude and it makes all of you uncomfortable. I'm not going to apologize for that. Unless you guys are like, hey, you know, that's too far. Then I'd be like, all right, sorry. But if I'm just like role playing it and just through me playing that character, he just creeps you guys the fuck out. I don't think I need to apologize. I think there are certain aspects of it, like for instance, you know, rape and anything sexual. If some you creep someone out through creep out a person through sexual means, through role play, that might be a, you know, a sidebar conversation with that person. Like, hey, sorry.
Let me ask you this. Because It says right here, if you think you might have upset someone, then ask them quietly, and if you have, apologize. Now, do you think it's... Say you feel like you might have upset somebody through talking. Or better yet, I believe the episode is out now. I was informed that when we released this last SU, numbers 1 through 5, that we might have spoiled some stuff. I'm hoping that's not the case now.
If you're going to talk about the Brenna Talon thing, that has not yet come out.
Okay, then fine. Devin, if say you talked about a topic that you think might have upset somebody or made somebody, you know, a little iffy, do you think it's necessarily 100% up to you to inquire as to if you did? Or do you think that if you were upset by a topic that was brought up, that maybe you should be the one to say, hey, moving forward, can we just not talk about this because I'm not cool with it? Or both?
Yeah. I mean, if they're giving off the vibe that they're upset, if you just want to drop them a message or say, hey, you know, hey, did I upset you? I don't think there's an issue with that. But if they feel upset and they don't express that and you don't catch on to it, they can't come back to you a week later and be like, yo, man, you're really fucked up. You know, you're a fucked up person. You're like, what do I do? You know,
now what kind of vibes like, okay,
I'm
completely 100% oblivious to things.
I mean, like if you're sitting there and you're being really uncomfortable, let's say, you know, your character, you know, this is an extreme example. Let's say your character raped an NPC. And everyone else is sitting there after that scene, and they're just kind of like, okay. Like, you know, that kind of thing, or people, or, you know, somebody in the room is just like super, you know, their attitude totally changes towards you. Like, they're all laughing and talking, and the next second they're super quiet, just not saying anything. All
right.
You know, those kind of obvious vibes. I mean, I don't think you have to really dive deep. But also, too, as a player, if you know, like, I think a good role player, both levels, there would kind of warn the group ahead of time, like, hey guys, you know, this is the character, not me, sorry if it offends, you know, that kind of thing. I think we've all done that before at one point or another, like, this is the character, not me,
right?
We've all said that at one point or another. I think, you know, that's definitely easy to be said, and I think that, like I said, as a good role player, I think you would be able to easily do that. And you, as a good person, you should just realize when something could make another person uncomfortable, that you should probably just disclaimer your action with that.
And I mean, I'm
or just say, hey, you know, this happens. I'm not going to go into detail about it, but this happens. You know, like, let's say you're, you know, again, going back to the extreme case of, you know, your PC raping an NPC.
Right.
You know, if, first off, don't go into detail on that.
Right.
You know, or if, you know, an NPC is raping another NPC, the GM should not go into detail on that. It should just be like, you know, the doors close. This happens.
Right.
What happens do you do
off
about
screen.
It? It happens off screen. Doors closed. This happens. What do you do about it? Right. You know, that it should never be an in-depth conversation. It should never be anything like that. You know, those kind of things. So,
yeah
that's how I feel about it.
Edgeworth?
I mean, I pretty much agree with all of it. I mean, what we've done usually happens off screen. Like, for instance, Lincoln and Zoe have a child. And we never saw any of that happening, so I think we're good.
It was alluded to.
It was.
In the pool, but then it was, and, you know, 1980s fade out.
And because you didn't see it happen on screen, might not be his child. You never know. Lincoln demands a blood test.
Although now, to be fair, that child's probably inherited your whole fortune.
Yeah, probably.
You're probably broke.
I remember that because it didn't happen on screen. Webby was like, is that his child?
Yeah.
Like, what? Oh.
I will say that some games, and I don't condone it, but some games, especially ones that I DM, like the Vamp game. We have the Vamp game that has been starting to get released, The Brood. That's kind of lighthearted. People, yeah, you know, some dark shit happens, but you guys tend to always crack enough jokes where you guys keep it lighthearted enough. There is another side project that we're doing. It's another Vamp game. And I've already warned the players that this is dark. It is dark and creepy, and I apologized ahead of time.
It's the world I live in as a player. So
yeah, yes, a vampire has
already enticed me with a game. Use a gritty, dark, realistic, and creepy. I'm in.
Yeah,
like,
you're talking about vampires like Zemitzis, who one of their spells, one of their rituals, specifically states that you have to have an unborn fetus, and then you essentially turn that into a blood. Water
a jelly
flask. You turn it into a water flask.
Yeah, there you go.
But for blood. It's fucked up.
We already had a creepy guy come onto my character, which
and your sister
you realized
very young, by the way.
Yeah, I mean not even that one too. Yeah, that was bad too. But the one that we just like at the end of the, I'm not gonna give anything away, but it's very inappropriate considering who my character is.
Wait, he came onto your character?
Yeah, when they were all talking at the end. Remember he read us what it said that he had to, at the end? You read specifically what it said he had to do?
Nope, these are things that I don't remember.
Yeah.
I tried to take all the really bad things and block it out of my mind. Oh, yes, I remember now. Yeah. I remember now. Yeah, so things like that, very dark. But anyway, moving on, obviously I agree with both of you. If it's going to happen, if it's pertinent to the story, for whatever reason, which sometimes it is. Like, I don't condone rape, obviously. But you know what? In a fantasy setting, I'm going to say the majority of half-orcs, that's how you have them. Because not very often do you find a human or another race who just falls in love with an orc, and then they go and have babies. Normally, orcs are raiding parties. Normally, they pillage and rape and plunder, and that's the orc life. So, hey, half-orcs. Those are a thing. So, but if it is pertinent to the story, off-screen. If you do continually bring it up, and it starts making people feel uncomfortable, and you get wind of that, tone it back, dial it back, stop talking about it altogether, and apologize.
I mean... None of us, I think, are creepy. I mean,
I'm
off the top of my head, let's say, I don't think any of us would cut the tongues out of children and cut
You haven't seen me unchained. and that's a very low blow. And I appreciate that. Thank you.
I don't know what you're talking about, Devin.
I love you, Equus. That's all I'm saying. I love you.
All right.
But, you know, like, you haven't seen me Unchained. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, man. Hey, you'd have no idea the lengths I'll go to as a player to leave no witnesses.
Oh, I know. I've seen Doc. I know.
Oh, fair enough.
You have no idea the lengths I will go to just make... If I'm trying to get the point that this character is dark and creepy, I will go through insane lengths to make sure that's done.
I'm not going to lie.
I have a line I will draw.
I'm not going to lie. And if anybody out there wants to do this, I would like somebody to DM a vamp game where me and Devin can play as characters in the same vamp game. Because I want to be unchained, so to speak, and let loose the way I know how.
And I want to watch him do this.
So, yeah.
And I want to be a part of it. Because I've heard his stories that he tells me from his role-playing sessions, and I'm like, I want to play with this person.
We'd have to lock that behind Patreon with, like, maturity and trigger warnings, I think.
Yeah.
That's fine.
We got this. All right, so number 9, moving on. Be a storyteller. The World of Darkness books call their GM a storyteller because they are very obviously unable to call a spade a spade.
Look at that unprofessional segue, though.
Yep. But they have a point. A GM is telling stories. It's easy to forget that the players are doing that, too. So put some effort in. Say some words. Develop a character voice and a stance. Describe your actions. Work out a level of agency with the GM so you can chip into wider descriptions or just make assumptions and describe it and see if it sticks. A good GM should go with what you're saying anyway, unless it really goes against their plan. Which I have you as players all throw me curveballs all the time. And I just kind of have to roll with it. Similarly, brevity equals soul of wit and all that. A good GM doesn't monologue or have their NPCs have long discussions or make players sit back and watch while their world plays out. So know when to shut up and to keep your description short, unless you're an incredible storyteller, of course. But short and punchy is always better than long and flowery. Well... there have been conversations in the fan chat about this. at least about certain characters. Edquist, what's your opinion on this? There's a lot to that whole paragraph.
Yeah. I mean, he's right about it being a story. Like, it's basically a collaborative story. I don't know that, like, short and punchy and long and flowery don't really... I think you should take the middle of the road for both of those. Like, sure, sometimes one or the other, but mostly you kind of want it to be in between, like, enough to get your point across and to describe what you're doing, but not so much that people are like, okay, when are you going to stop?
Because I definitely think, like, especially in distractions, you could label somebody like Astonis, short and punchy.
Mm-hmm.
Iroh, long and flowery. Even sometimes Talon. Long and flowery. I do agree that you should have kind of a middle of the road. Especially with Dungeons and Dragons. Actually, with any game that you play, the DM or the GM is essentially they have an overarching story that they're trying to tell. And you guys are effectively acting it out.
Essentially, the best way to put it, I think, is the GM. The GM is the canvas. Is like the canvas paper, and it's, you know, so he sets the boundaries and then we paint the picture.
Right.
That's basically it. You know, he sets the boundaries, he hands us the tools, but we paint the picture, and that's kind of what needs to be done.
And see, I'm a big fan of, for the most part, and I agree with this guy where he says a good GM should go with what you're saying anyway, unless it really, really goes against their plan. I'm a big fan of, you guys are telling, you know, you have your own stories to tell in addition to playing out the story that I'm trying to tell, but everything you guys do, every choice you guys make affects something, whether for the good or for the bad. And very seldom do I give you choices to make where it's just benign. Just, oh, here's a set of choices you can make. It's not going to impact anything anywhere, you know. And I love that's one of the reasons why I like DMing. And I, you know, adversely, I like playing too, but I like being able to start, like you said, give you the canvas, and then you guys just skate around, do your thing, and essentially you're growing my world. You're expanding the world that we're building by inquiring, asking questions on stuff. You know, yeah, one thing that Austin's known for, and I fucking love him and hate him for it, is he'll meet an NPC. Oh, what's his name? I don't fucking know. This is Joe Schmo off the street. He really wasn't anybody of importance.
He forces your NPCs to be important.
Yeah. So now I have to come up with a name on the spot, and then...
Is that how Tusk was born?
Nope. Tusk was a predetermined NPC that I already had built up. I will
they asked
say,
him to name all the slaves. Oh, well, you were there. He was asked him to name all the slaves that you freed.
Yep. I had the, and those guys are now in the world. Those guys have a role to play. In a game that I don't think has been released yet, there is an NPC that they fell in love with this guy, and they asked me what the name was, and I was like, oh, fuck, Earl. And they're like, Earl? It's like, yeah. And, oh, Earl, nice to meet you. What's your last name? Fucking Earl? I don't know. So now there's an NPC out there whose first, middle, and last name is Earl, Earl, Earl. Yep. Huge drunk. That's all you need to know. So.
I just really want a NPC that's based off Chuck Bertowski. That's really what I want. He's just wandering around the world.
I don't know.
That's
who
what
that
I want.
Is.
TV show Chuck. Great show.
Oh, never seen it.
You should see it. Great show.
Okay. I will remember you this. So yeah, I think we're all in agreement. It's not so much being short and punchy. It's more middle of the road. You know, be active in the story. Don't sit on the sidelines the entire time.
That's people often complain to my characters about that.
Yep. I've specifically inquired as your DM about your character, and then you explained to me the mindset of Atticus, and it made more sense to me, so now I'm off your back about it.
Yeah, I mean, so. I play characters that will grab attention. I play characters. That's the only character I actually haven't played yet, and that's going to change with a character that's in development that I'm working on. And Webby knows this.
Yeah.
Who's more so in going to be a lot more in your face, in the spotlight, talking, things like that. But more often than not, I play the low key character if the role requires it, given a reason. But that's really the only role. My favorite role is the role of the in your face character. I still have a character. I can't figure out a world to lock him down in. I have a character that's really kind of a obnoxious, like he talks really nasally. He's this obnoxious dude, but he's super charismatic. Just a super charismatic, obnoxious talking dude who's very braggarous and just in your face. And I love that character. I haven't played him yet. I haven't found the right role for him yet, but he's there. He's in the repertoire.
I'm going to tell everybody this. I also love playing certain types of characters. Generally, I never get to play the type of characters that I want to, though, because of the situationally the games that we're playing and the stories that they're trying to tell. It's just not right for me to make a character like that. I will say that I'm finally going to hopefully be able to play a character that is what I really want to try to play. And that's going to be in a little upcoming game that Donnie's going to DM. I'm not going to give away. I'm sure it's already been announced, but I'm still not going to give it away. And for those of you who do keep track of when some of us stream on Twitch, like Austin, and does some of his drawing stuff, he even drew my character streaming it on Twitch. So it's gonna be fun. I'm hoping that I can do the character justice, and that's only gonna be a part of what I would be able to do as a vamp character. So
it's another game I want to play.
Seriously, somebody out there, DM a vamp game for me and Devin. Okay.
And you're absolutely positive your friend won't be able to do it. Ross won't do it. You're positive.
I don't think Ross will do it. No. My buddy Chris might, but
I would say Chris. How about Chris? You know, I know he's a player. He knows the rules.
Yeah, but he wouldn't let me.
Are we talking about the same Chris?
Probably.
I'm talking about Luca Chris.
Yep.
Okay.
He wouldn't. That's the thing is
he wouldn't let you stretch your legs till you want.
He would he would restrict me, and pretty much keep me chained. So, who knows? Maybe once Edquist learns the rules, he'll write up a little vamp story, and we can play.
Yep.
Who knows?
Maybe.
Just throwing that out there. Anyway, moving on to number 10. We only got two more of these to do.
Cool.
Number 10, embrace failure. Failure can be embarrassing. I know that I get pretty het up. I don't know what that means. I don't know what H-E-T means. When the dice don't favor me. When I've spent ages waiting to have my turn in a large game, or when I'm using some special power, and when I've been talking a big talk for a while, or described some fancy-ass action, and I use some pretty bad language, too, and not fun bad language, like we all do when we're gaming, like threatening, is this guy okay bad? That's not cool. I need to learn to treat failure as a story branch, not a block. Why did I miss? Why didn't my intimidation roll work? Why didn't I pick the lock? Why was I seen? Who worked out that I'm the traitor? What other option can I explore? Some systems build this in by default. Apocalypse World, for example, and they give you the ability to somehow affect the world whenever you roll the dice, not just fail to affect someone's hit points. That's great. We need to get ourselves into the mindsets by default. We need to view failures as setbacks and explain why our character didn't achieve their goal, and we need to understand that failure is not the end of the world. This has happened to me so many times, especially in the Star Wars game, where it's like, I want to do this big spectacular power, and then all of a sudden I don't hit. It's like, okay, this is neat.
You limp-dicked it. You're like, yep. Oh,
shit. Yep. I will say that in The Brood, if they fail, more so if they botch, it's not just an automatic miss for them. I try to come up with interesting and unique ways that they end up hurting themselves or others around them. Farm boys. Oh, I gotta say.
That was beautiful, though. I mean, beautiful session.
So what do you guys think about failure?
You want me to take it first?
Sure.
All right. In terms of failure, I absolutely agree. You need to embrace the failure you have. Although I understand how some people get really pissed off and upset in certain games when you get one action or you get one chance and you're just like, oh, well, I just waited 5 minutes to go for my turn, and I roll the dice, and dice says I can't do anything, so I'm just going to sit here, you know? Failure can really take you out of a game really quickly in terms of it can just mentally take you out of the game sometimes.
I agree.
And yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, that's why I love systems where you can, you know, and I hate, you know, this sounds really weird as a role player. I hate having to try to come up with reasons of why, you know, I hate having to come up with reasons to keep myself in the game. So what I mean by that is like if in like D&D, if I roll the dice and I fail the hit and it's just like, you know, I was casting the spell, I lost my concentration and the spell went wide. You know, that's a very basic explanation, but it's a probable explanation. But I don't find that any more fun. That's just me coming up with a storyline reason of how what the dice reflect. that's not keeping me in the game at all. I much rather have it where it's like, I even like games where it's like, if you miss your spell, you have a chance of hitting somebody else. You know, it goes, you know, you cast it, it goes wide. It goes wide by, you know, roll a D10, eight squares. And then the GM picks a direction. And if your allies are within those eight squares in that direction, you could hit an ally. You could hit somebody else. You know, it's always more interesting that way. So I love systems that have built in when you fail, you have built in things besides just you fail and missed, you know, that's for my end, because it at least it keeps you in the game and it keeps it exciting. If you fail, it's like, oh, I failed, but this happens.
And I do say, and I will say that I've been working on a table of things of sorts for Distractions itself. It has not been implemented yet because it's not completed. Once I get it completed, I'm going to implement it. So that way, if you guys crit, there's going to be a table to roll on to see if it does extra damage or if it affects the creature or character that you hit in a certain way. Adversely, it's also a table that is going to be back in the world of second edition, so to speak, you know, because that's, you know, the last edition I played before joining the podcast. If you crit missed, adverse things happened, much like in Vamp. You could accidentally hit an ally. You could drop your weapon. If it wasn't magical, you could break your weapon. Then you're stuck with no weapon. Lots of varying things could happen if you missed, like in a critical miss. So keep looking forward to that, because that's going to be soon. Rob, what's your thoughts on failure?
I mean, it's definitely more interesting if you make it more interesting. Like Devin said, a lot of times we'll come up with a reason, but it's just like a throwaway. Like if we get a one on a perception, it's like, oh, well, I was too involved in doing this, so I didn't notice. Right. One of the things I like about Fate is that it always has some interesting thing with a failure. Like, and then a lot of times John is like, well, you tell me how you fail. So like, from one of our first episodes of the Vendetta Effect, I was sneaking around the back of a house and I was trying to unlock the back door and I got like a -2 for my sneaky. And he's like, well, tell me how you fail this. So then I was like, okay, well, he goes to unlock the door but he doesn't realize that it's already unlocked. So it flies open and he falls backwards and falls down the porch steps. And it's like, it's more fun if things like that happen, because then I had to deal with why I was getting up off the ground and dusting myself off when he came to the door. It's just,
you know, talking about Fate for a second, I want to say this because I know John listens to this, or at least I hope he's listening to this one because I know he listened to the first one. John, I love you. Remember that as soon as I say this. I think sometimes in Fate, maybe not so much the Vendetta Effect, but Fate in specifically, I think John has something in mind. Like, he's telling his story, and he has bullet points and stuff listed out, and he has something that he wants us to see. So he will pick a person and have them, like, roll a clever check. And then, so, like, if I rolled a 1, or maybe even a 0, he'll say, all right. And then he'll have me see it anyway. Or hell, let me see something. It's like, well, John, was that even high enough? Like, I don't think John sets DCs for that.
Yeah.
I think it's, oh, I want them to see this, so they're going to see it. It's just I want them to roll dice to make it seem more interesting sometimes.
Well,
if that's not
fair,
the case, John, then I'm sorry, but that's how it seems sometimes.
Anyway. I can defend John a little bit on that. To be fair, in Fate, technically in most situations, a 0 is a success.
A 0 is a success?
Yes, because it's actually a neutral positive scenario.
That's
like in Fate,
up.
For instance, if you're looking at like what each point matters, I believe a 1 is considered good in a skill. It's fair or good. So I mean, if you have a 1 in something, you're a 0 is average. If I'm not mistaken, in the rating system in Fate. So you run into that. So, yeah, I mean, for sure, that's probably why. So if it's something he really wants people to be seen, you know, he wants you to seen, you know, he wants you to see, he's probably setting the DC's probably a zero.
Right.
Yeah. What I think he might do is, okay, so you got a one. So this is the level of detail you get about the thing that you saw. Like, if you had gotten a higher number, you would have gotten more detail.
Yeah, I hope that's the case, because I like that method of thinking as well. And also, before my statement, I did not realize that a zero was a success. So, Devin, I appreciate that. And number two, John, if you come to me after listening to this episode saying, oh, this is exactly, Devin and Edquist were both right, this is how I have been right, you know what, screw you for taking their answers.
Yeah, so to give you an idea, a zero would be the baseline of what would, I guess, would require to be a success, for instance. So, like, and if you're looking at, I don't
so
know.
Like
if
the, in Vamp is so, a six. So then. Middle of the road.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. Oh, because a one is average. So a plus one, if you have a plus one in a stat, you're average at that. So zero is, you're slightly below average, but to notice something that's not, that to notice a key piece of a story, to set it at a zero would not be unheard of.
Okay. Yeah, see, well, I didn't know that.
Because I was going to say, though, like, because then that makes it really simple, because it, once you get a skill up to a plus four, like, zero is the lowest you can get. So you can
exactly. So, I mean, so theoretically, you should always, you know, if you're, let's say, a clever, if you're that clever, you should theoretically always notice it. You know, you're a very clever person, because a plus four in Fate, I think, is considered, like, great.
Now, see, that's the thing, is in Fate, if you have a plus four, you're just, oh, no, you are just adding a plus to the end of it.
Yeah, you're adding just a plus to an end. Yeah. So, I mean, theoretically, yeah.
So, if you got a negative, it would come out to
the worst you can roll is a zero at that point.
Right.
Which doesn't affect too much stuff in terms of noticing things and things like that. But when you're, you know, in combat, obviously, you roll all negatives and somebody counters you with something else, then you're probably not going to be doing, you know, if it's a contested roll. But just to notice stuff, like, if you're, like, you're a master detective, you know, you're really clever, you should be able to walk, because Fate's all about the story. Fate's all about pushing the game forward. Fate's all about, you know, it's not really about the dice rolls. Fate's really just about the narrative. So you walk in and you know, this person is the most clever, then, hey, you know what? You're the best detective in the world. You should notice this when you walk in the room. It's, you know, you shouldn't even have to roll for it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, but you definitely might, if he sets it up, theoretically, either way, he should be tiering the information you get off how many successes. That would be ideal, unless it was an all or nothing kind of a thing.
Right.
And he was just going to be like, all right, everybody. But I think in certain situations, though, he shouldn't single out a singular person, and that might open up more role-playing opportunities for other people.
Yeah.
So, like, instead of, you know, we all walk in a room and it's Lincoln, give me a clever role, it should just be, hey, everyone give me
that
a clever
should,
role.
First off, that should never be the thing, because Lincoln is the least clever person out of all of you.
I was tied with you in least clever until recently, sir.
I'm just saying. And how do you know until recently? How do you know that I haven't been distributing more points into clever than Devin? Yeah, you don't know. That's what I thought.
You could be. You could be. I mean, my whole sheet changed, so.
I mean, well, again, to kind of defend John, a lot of times when he asks for a certain person.
What? We're not attacking John to defend.
Yeah, John, so don't word it as in John's defense. John, I am not attacking you, but if I was, you'd lose. Okay, go ahead, Edquist.
To understand John more, I think when he's asking for certain people, it's because only those people would notice what it is. Like, when he asked Devin to roll for that newspaper, it was because, the date on the graves, it was because he was the only one that had read the newspaper that had the same date. So that's why he only asked Devin to roll.
Right. Absolutely. But also, too, though, I think I think even in situations like that, you could have everybody roll and be like, hey, you know, you realize this is the date, you know, but if that was a key moment that he wanted to drive the story forward, I understand that. But then it would then arm other people with some other information on, you know, different sides. And so then that way it would also force character interaction more. Like, if I noticed something, but Lincoln had the other piece of the puzzle and I said it out loud, or I was just, and I informed the party of it, Lincoln goes, wait a minute, that makes sense. And then we can then work together to come up with a solution. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, I think that creates more of that However, like I said, if it's a key information point and you're crunching on people talking, it could go badly if, you know, the person that figures it out doesn't relay that information. Mm-hmm. So I definitely understand on both ways.
Right on. All right. So last but not least, number 11. Play the fucking game. It's a game. It's not a challenge that only exists in the head of your DM. This is not your character's personal story. This is not your blog. This is not an excuse to chat up one of the other players. This is not a table to sit at in silence. It's a game. We have signed up to play the game together. We are telling a story with each other, to each other, and the story comes first. Step back from the heat of combat. Step back from your character's difficult relationship with their half-drow mother. Half-drow, I wonder how that happened. Step back from the way that the paladin's player keeps stealing your dice. Didn't you hear the earlier thing? Don't, paladin, first off, you're lawful good. Don't go stealing. Second, don't steal from other players. We've already discussed this. This is a game. Respect other players. Respect the story and act in service of it. Respect that you will not always get your way, and that not getting your way can be interesting. Do what's best for the game. Do what's best for the story. Be active. Be positive. Be interesting. Change things. If you can't walk away at the end of the night with a good memory, with something that you could talk about in the pub in years to come, then everyone at the table has failed. And that's number 11. I agree, man. It's all about having fun. It's a game. If I've always been under the rule that if, as a DM, If you're playing in a game that I DM, if you're not having fun, maybe this isn't the game for you. Maybe if you have a very specific reason why you're not having fun, we can work on it. And if that one thing or another can't change, then we need to assess your playing in that game. If I'm a player, adversely, if I'm a player playing in a game and I'm not having fun, I'm just going to find a way to rule my character out.
Yeah, I mean,
it's going to be best for everybody else.
Mm-hmm. You go through and you figure, you have to be able to identify why you're not having fun. Is mm-hmm. it, I'm not having fun as a player because I don't jive with these other players? Is it, I'm not having fun as a player because I just don't like my character anymore? Like, I had different ideas for this character when I started, and then things changed, and I don't like the way this character plays anymore. You know, and if it's the latter, that's really easy to fix. You say, hey, I want to write this character out. Right. Next chance we get, maybe next point in town, he falls madly in love with a bar maiden and he retires. Or whatever, you know?
Yep.
You know, you write that character out.
I have a good example of that to bring John back into this again.
John, we're not attacking you. But again, if I was,
although
I'd be winning.
Equus might be attacking you. Equus is kind of mean. He's just punching you left and right, John. I don't know.
That's true.
Yep.
All these low blows.
But he had said that he had stopped having fun playing Karnar. So like he was like, it's just not fun for me anymore. I don't like it. So we killed Karnar off, and now Brenna is one of his favorite characters. Like I think it's his current favorite character to play.
Holy shit, John plays Brenna?
I thought Brenna plays John.
Scottish guy.
No, it's Brenna plays John. That's really what happens.
yeah, I mean that's the easy one to do too. Is if you're just not having fun playing the character, talk to your DM. You can most DMs will be certain to work things out. I've come across two instances so far where I, as a player, love playing a character, but the DM no longer has fun because I'm just too overpowered or they can't work around me some fashion. So in one game, I've worked with the DM on altering how I can play him to where I'm still having fun playing him, but I'm slightly more restricted so the DM can actually affect things and I can't just say, nope, not gonna happen. And then the other way, I legit was playing a Minotaur fighter in a second edition campaign, and he tried nerfing me. Like, legit, here's the situation. I was a Minotaur fighter who was very antisocial. Like, I didn't trust most people except for my buddy Eric's character, who played a wizard or a mage or whatever. and he was my, like, he helped me out. He was my talking point. He made sure nobody took advantage of me because I wasn't smart. I didn't know how to math. But character, you know, Eric's character, every time we went into combat, his go-to was, oh, I have this fucking 7.5 foot tall Minotaur. I'm going to cast Enlarge on him. So now he's even bigger and he hits harder in second edition. Now go run and kill stuff. So I would just run in there and kill stuff. Because me as a fighter, I legit said, I swing. You hit? Cool. Do damage. I swing. You missed. All right, I guess I don't do damage this turn. You know, that's as fighters, that's all you have. You don't have
everyone sitting at home. Let me watch me trigger Webby real quick. Hold on one sec. One, two, three. Thaco.
Yeah, dude. Fuck Thaco. I hate Thaco. I'm so glad they got rid of it. Anyway, moving on. So
shouldn't it really be Thac Zero anyway?
This I hate you so bad. Anyway, so this bothered Chris. Like he didn't have a workaround. Like he would have to throw harder monsters knowing that I was there, but then if that monster even got a single hit off on one of the other party members, they would fucking one-shot them because the monster was so powerful. So he didn't know how to balance the fights properly with me involved, and so he started trying to put restrictions. So he told Eric, hey, you can't use the enlarge spell for whatever reason on Webby anymore. And it was like, we were playing by the rules. But me and Eric both agreed, says, fine, we'll do it without the enlarged thing. I still was an issue. I was just, you know, I'd crit and one-shot a fucking boss. And it's like, okay, well, I didn't mean to do that, but that happened. So I essentially took it upon myself, and I loved playing that character, but I took it upon myself to retire that character. I found a good spot, and just kind of, we literally fell into it. And I retired that character. And then I started playing a little halfling who didn't speak common. So that was real interesting. Sitting at a table full of people who were speaking common to each other, and I was just walking around with like a little voodoo wooden mask over my face, poking people in an inn with a little tiny spear. So yeah, that was good.
And if you listened to last week's episode, you know how he was retired and probably where that halfling came from.
Yep. That is exactly where that halfling came from.
Yep. There you go.
So it's all about having fun. And you got to also balance that out with other players. If you're not having fun because of another player, talk to your DM. And then gauge the situation. If you're friends with the other player, talk to the other player. Say, hey, man, me and you, we're just not clicking, whether it be our characters or what. And then try to find a workaround. Always try to find a workaround. Ultimately, if you want to step away from the table because you're not having fun, it's better to step away from the table than to just sit there and drudge through it and seem uninterested to everyone around you. That's my go-to on this.
I must say, when the title of the rule was play the game, I thought it was going to be about, you know, stop making excuses not to play the game. Oh, I have work. There's a funeral today. It's my wedding. I mean, come on, guys.
Yeah, no shit. Hey, if you're at a funeral and you're supposed to be playing a game, roll the dice on the coffin.
Fuck. Yeah, fuck yeah. Do it.
You know, there's usually tables there somewhere. So what if, you know, Aunt Kathy's sitting up there at the funeral thing giving a speech about, you know, whoever, and how, then you hear some dice rolling in the back. And who knows, maybe there's some D&D fans in the crowd. That you didn't even know.
Yep. Yep. And at your wedding, do I take this woman? Let's see. Roll the dice.
Roll the dice. You know, you can have a little, they make dice spinner rings. Get her one of those.
There you go.
Do you take so and so to be your lawfully wedded husband? Well, I don't know. Crit one. Nope. And then she fucking bails. It's like, well, I guess, I mean, can't really argue that. It was dice.
Yep. So. There you go. I mean, and to be fair, I mean, going back to an earlier point of I like going dark with things. If you're at the funeral, you forget the dice, go old school with it. Knuckle bones. He's not using them. He's dead.
True.
Uncle Chuck's not using those knuckle bones. He's dead.
True.
Pull those things out. Carve some numbers on them.
Unless it's
roll them up.
Unless it's Uncle Carl, because we don't talk about Uncle Carl's hook hand.
That's true. We don't. Don't talk about Uncle Carl's hook hand.
Anyway, So,
talking about it.
Anybody else have anything to say about number 11 before we wrap this up?
No.
Nope.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody. I want to thank you two for joining me tonight and doing the part two of how to be a better role player. Some of the things in this article we agreed with overall. Some of them we disagreed with. But overall, not a bad article. Again, I want to give credit to the author of the article, Grant. No last name. So Grant, thumbs up. Keep writing.
Maybe he's Grant.
Grant. That's true. If you are Grant, write me an email. And for anybody out there who has topic suggestions or want advice answered or questions answered, whatever, you guys can also send emails at simplyunprofessional@gmail.com. Also, hit up the Facebook page at Facebook/SimplyUnprofessional. Just fucking search for Simply Unprofessional in the Facebook thing. You'll find it. There's a panda playing video games. Edquist, where can people find you at?
You can find me on the Twitters at Confessor_X and ConfessorX and most other things.
Devin, where can people find you at?
You guys can find me at DArrow3092.
And as always, you guys can follow me on Twitter at JaxForestWalker, all one word. Also, ladies, I checked the inbox for Simply Unprofessional. No boob pics yet. What's up?
Did Austin get dick pics?
I don't know. We have to ask him. We'll be talking to him here in a few minutes, so we'll ask. Also, yes, dick pics to CZ, no, to, I don't know, Austin's email.
I don't know his email.
Just shoot him to Twitter. Twitter allows it. Just shoot him to Twitter.
Or shoot him to Distractions Media. I'm sure you can find the email at gmail.com. There you go. I'm sure it'll go there somewhere.
Subject Austin.
Austin eyes only. So yeah, until next time, guys. Fuck Booster Gold.
This has been a Distractions Media production. For more info, you can check out everything we do at distractionsmedia.com.